From the Ghost Night Media Studios, welcome to the Paranormal Underground Presents podcast, where we explore the unexplained with our resident panel and our special guests.
Hi, it's Karen, and we have a really cool show today. We're going to be talking to Jennifer Hicks, who is a psychic medium and also a police psychic. And Jennifer actually has agreed to do a reading with one of our panelists today. And so we invited Annie Mays to be one of our panelists, and she gets to have the reading. So welcome, Annie.
Thank you. Hi.
Good to have you. Thanks for doing this.
That's fine.
Yeah. And also we have with us Chad Wilson, our publisher. Hey, Chad.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. And we have Melissa Watts. You've heard Melissa Watts if you listen to our podcast regularly. She is a former guest of ours. She's a good friend of mine. She's a past life regression hypnotherapist. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Karen.
Good to have you. Thanks for doing this. And Melissa is also a close friend of Jennifer's, so we thought it'd be cool to have her on the panel with us. And last but not least, we also have our editor-in-chief, Cheryl Knight. Hi, Cheryl.
Hey, Karen. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Jennifer today. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about her abilities and her work as a psychic working with the police.
Yeah, that's interesting. We just had another psychic who worked with the police, so this will be interesting to see how her experiences differ from Jackie Barrett's. So today we're going to be talking to Jennifer Hicks. She's the host of Contact Talks Radio, Never a Dull Moment, Speaking to Spirits. She first began picking up psychic information when she was 16. Since then, her abilities have grown, and she now does readings for the general public, and she also works with the police to help solve violent crimes. Her show, Never a Dull Moment, can be heard on Friday evenings from 8 to 9 Eastern on Contact Talk Radio, and you'll find that link on our website. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Presents, Jennifer Hicks.
Well, thank you for having me, Karen. I really appreciate you asking me to be on the show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Before we start with everybody interviewing you, I actually wanted to ask you about your recent trip, because you just went to Guatemala and toured the Mayan ruins. And I'm really interested to hear how that goes for a psychic.
Well, I wondered what was going to happen too, because not only am I a psychic, I am a medium, so I see dead people. And I did not know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I walked through these ancient Mayan cities, if I was going to literally see or feel the presence of deceased people there from way back in the day. But as it turns out, I did not, which in a way was kind of nice because I was on vacation and I did really want to relax. So I usually have psychic dreams every night of the year. That did not change. I did pick up psychic information during the day about things that were going to happen later that day, but that happens when I'm at home. So there was nothing strange that happened, though, psychically when I was down there.
But was it a very cool place to visit?
Oh, amazing. I've wanted to go to the Mayan ruins since I took Latin American history with Mr. Fedak in the seventh grade. And Mr. Fedak, if you're listening, I finally made it. It was amazing. I went to Tikal in a town called Quiroa, which are in Guatemala, and then we crossed the border into Honduras and visited another Mayan place called Copan. And the jungle took over all of these places, and a lot of them have only been discovered, let's say, in the last 100 to 150 years. And archaeologists are still whacking away at the trees and the vines and the plants that have taken over. So some of these places, only 30 or 40% of the temples have been uncovered. They still have a lot more work to do.
Well, it sounds like a really cool trip. It's one of the places that I'd like to go visit at some point, too. So I was really interested to talk to you about that. Okay, so now that I'm done with my little aside, the first person who is going to ask you questions is our editor-in-chief, Cheryl Knight. So, Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks for being with us today, Jennifer. I'm really excited to talk to you. I guess maybe if you could just start out by telling us a bit about your psychic abilities and how they work.
Okay. I am psychic. I'm also a medium. The psychic stuff started with me when I was back in high school. I didn't have any mediumistic experiences back then. But as you probably are aware, there are five senses on the metaphysical side as we have here. So as we have sight, there is sight on the psychic realm. As there is the sense of smell on the physical realm, there is a metaphysical sense of smell. So I have all five senses psychically However, I tend to hear things psychically and see them psychically more than I do smell or taste or touch. But I have had all those other experiences as well.
Okay. Why do you think that you have these psychic abilities?
I have no clue. I think everybody has psychic ability. I think that everybody has intuition. I don't feel that it's a gift that certain people have. I don't feel like I'm a chosen person. If you had told me years ago that I would be doing this, I would have laughed at you. I would have said no way. But okay. What I have found from talking with other people who have very well-developed psychic ability, it chose them. It happened to them. They did not expect it. They did not think that this was ever going to happen to them. So why some people seem to be more adept at this, I have no clue.
Okay. Do you think people can develop their psychic abilities once they kind of see that there might be something present, or is it just something that's more of a natural thing?
I think people can develop it. Okay. Yeah, I think people can develop it. I feel that it's something that we people had. It's interesting. I was thinking about this when I was down in Guatemala walking through the ruins, because, you know, there's all this talk now about the year 2012 and what were the Mayans talking about. Well, I met with some archaeologists down there who said that even though the Mayans did talk about the 2012 date, there was nothing in their hieroglyphics that said anything about doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that way back in the day, people used their sixth sense, or the other five senses perhaps is a better way to describe it, on a daily basis. And I think that they needed to do that to stay alive and to survive. I don't think that the human race could have made it this far without the use of these other paranormal skills. But what's interesting is the Mayans view the beginning of time as being August 13th, 3114 BC. They had a very special date. Interestingly, August 13th is my birthday, but we'll just go past that. They thought that before that date and time, that there were no regular humans on the planet, but there were gods. And I wondered when I was down there if what they really meant was the gods that walked this earth before that magical August 13th date, 3114 BC, really meant people, but who were highly evolved and had the paranormal abilities, that everybody may have been using their intuition, that everyone may have been having mediumistic experiences, and that when this event happened way back then, 3,000 years before the birth of Christ, that people may have just lost these skills.
Okay. That's very interesting. So do you think that there might come a time when people will, I don't know if you want to say as a collective, regain these skills and kind of move forward into a different, I don't know if it's a psychic or spiritual being setting,
whatever. Well, that's what's so interesting about the whole Mayan 2012 situation. It's a very long, involved story, but they had a number of calendars running concurrently at the same time. They didn't have the same kind of sense of time that we had. They were interested not in decades and centuries and millennia, but in periods of time that were 200 years, 400 years, and 5,200 years. Why everybody is freaking out is that one of these 5,200-year cycles ends in the year 2012. Now, this archaeologist down there who has been working in the Mayan ruins for over 33 years, he poo-pooed the whole doom and gloom scenario, saying it's just a bunch of hooey by a lot of authors and movie makers who are trying to make money. But he did not reject the idea that when 2012 comes and goes, that we are now entering this new Mayan cycle, because the Mayans just believed that things were cyclical. They did not think that the end of the world was 2012, but a new 5,200-year cycle began then. And he did say it may end up being a time of greater peace, greater harmony, and a time when people go back to using more of these metaphysical skills. And I think we've seen this over the last, 30 years or even 40 years from the 1960s on, with people becoming more interested in metaphysics.
I once talked to someone who had a number of alien abduction experiences, and supposedly those experiences included a significant date and significant images being shown to the person about 2012 or mm-hmm. around there, so to speak. He wasn't sure if it was doom and gloom or if it was a new beginning or whatever. Do you think that, and I don't know what your belief is surrounding life beyond Earth, but do you think that it might, that 2012 date or the Mayan calendar or what have you have to do with more than what we see here and feel here? It could go beyond this world.
Do you mean that the Mayan calendar ending, this cycle ending in 2012, that the new age may usher in communication with people that are not on this planet?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think anything is possible. I believe that there is intelligent life out there. And I don't feel that we're alone. It's nothing that I have picked up psychically. It's just a rational idea. I just find it ludicrous that we humans should be so pompous as to think that we're the only creatures right. out there. And I don't think that we're actually the most intelligent form of life. I mean, we are the only species on this planet that really likes to rape its own and kill and wage war and pollute the planet. So I think that any other form of life outside this planet may be far more intelligent than we are. But I don't know. I don't know if with 2012 coming and going, if there is going to be anything unusual where we could be contacting other people from other realms. I'd say anything's possible.
Okay, great. Some people say that their psychic abilities are a gift, while I've heard others call it a curse. And I wanted to know what you felt about your psychic abilities. Is it something that you value, that you think is a gift, or do you think it's more of a burden?
It's both. It depends on what day of the week you're asking me that question.
I'm sure.
Today hasn't been a bad day. So good. I'd say that, some days it feels like a gift. Other days it feels like a curse. And actually, there are time periods in my life when I look back when it has felt like a terrible, terrible, terrible curse. What happened to me about, 13, 14 years ago is that I started picking up a lot of criminal information just spontaneously. Mm-hmm. I would watch the evening news and hear that, let's say, there was a serial rapist running around, and I would pick up the person's name or where they lived or what they looked like. And a lot of times the information ended up being correct. And talk about being afraid. That's when it really felt like a curse. And to make a long story short, I ended up doing police work. I actually ended up doing work with the police before I even started doing readings for the general public. I thought that I was losing my mind. I could not understand why this was happening to me. I'm not, what do they call them? Badge bimbos. One of these girls who chases after the cops. I'm not into crime shows on TV. I don't have any interest in, police work or law enforcement. So I was stumped and I was scared. Other times, if I get a heads up that I need to watch out for a certain person or, you just have to take care of this and take care of that. When you get a heads up that can help save time or money or aggravation, then it seems like a gift.
Can you or have you ever been able to prevent, let's say you saw something before it happened, can you contact police and prevent it from happening, or is that just not the way it works?
It depends. I don't know if anything that I have picked up has prevented anything. The problem with dealing with people in law enforcement is that they have to be very careful about spending taxpayer money on something that a psychic tells them.
Okay.
So I could be absolutely accurate. Another psychic could call the police and say, such and such a situation is going to happen, and they could be 100% accurate. However, you've got law enforcement agencies using taxpayer money to go out and chase bad guys and make sure that things don't happen. So if they think that you are reliable, if they have found that your information is correct, they will take it into consideration. And I think that they will use it to a certain extent, but I don't think that they're going to develop a task force and pour hundreds of thousands of taxpayers' dollars into, say, a search party without more to back it up. Another thing that I've been told is that we believe you. We do believe that if we go into that man's house, for instance, who you think is the person who committed a crime, that we will find a murder weapon there, but we cannot get a search warrant based on what a psychic says.
Right. Okay. It kind of just like the Tom Cruise movie Minority Report, just kind of like, I wonder if we're ever going to get to a stage where we actually have that going on, where, you know, you have this unit that's stopping crimes from happening in the future. Or I don't know if I'm saying that right, but they see the future and they can stop it right before it happens. So it's just something that I think is kind of an interesting.
It is frustrating because I have picked up on news events, horrible things that have happened before they've happened. And then when you see them happening, it's really very, very upsetting. And that's when this feels like a curse.
Right. Okay. Do you work with the local police, or is it, do you kind of branch out, or how does that usually work?
Actually, I got started working with the FBI in New Jersey.
FBI.
That's how, And I primarily worked with them for quite some time. I have not done any police work in a while, and actually I'm kind of glad about that because it takes you to a very dark, dark place. So I've really just been working with the general public lately.
And when you work with the general public, what if you could just tell us one or two of the most asked questions that you get? I'm interested in knowing what type of questions you get from the general public.
These days? Is my job safe? It's interesting. With the change in the economy, people are very concerned about their fiscal situation. Is my house going to be taken away? Is my job safe? Or I'm out of work. When am I going to find a job? What's interesting is that I do psychic fairs in the New York City area, and we're seeing more men showing up. You know, a lot of times women are the primary customer for psychics. And, of course, they're very concerned about their children and romance. But these days, a lot of the questions are about money, jobs, financial safety. And I think that's why we're seeing more guys showing up at some of the psychic fairs. Another big one is, is my significant other cheating on me?
Right. Okay.
And could you be a fly on the wall, Jennifer, and tell me where he was last night? And I always say to people, don't even think about asking me that question unless you want the answer, because I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. If I pick up that he's cheating, I'm going to tell you. So don't ask unless you're ready to know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. My last question, I was reading your bio and I saw that you had kept your abilities a secret quite a while from your, even from your friends and family, before you actually told them. Can you tell us why did you keep it a secret? And then what made you finally decide to reveal your abilities to your friends and family?
Okay. There's many, many, many reasons. I grew up in a family where this was just not acceptable.
Okay.
My mother and father were both math majors. They were both engineers. Sorry to say, but a lot of people in sciences and technical fields don't tend to believe in this. Fortunately for me, I was not one of these kids who had this starting up in their life when they were about six or seven. It didn't start with me until I was about 16. At that age, I knew how much deep doo-doo I would be in if my parents knew what was going on. So I made the conscious choice at the age of 16, I better keep my mouth shut. It's also from the religious upbringing. I was raised as a Catholic. My mother would have absolutely had a fit. I probably would have ended up in, you know, like a convent, you know, they would have pushed me away and shut the door and lock the key and say, she's crazy. Or I would have ended up in a shrink's office. So I knew that it wasn't going to be pretty based on, you know, the family dynamic. I was not born to very bohemian hippie type people. So that's the reason I kept it secret at that time.
Okay.
And I have four younger brothers and sisters, and I knew that if I mentioned anything to them, my parents would even be angrier. So I just decided to keep it quiet. And then as I got older and I went to college, you know, I kept my mouth shut through college. Also back then, I wasn't having as many episodes as I do now. Now I pick up psychic information daily, nightly. Okay. Back then it wasn't happening a lot. It was only happening a couple of times a month. So I didn't really feel that there was much to talk about. But then I was a biology major in college. And again, you're dealing with scientific people. They tend to be very, in the box thinkers in a certain sense, meaning right. If they cannot see something in front of them under a microscope, or if they cannot see a chemical reaction take place in front of them and have the substrate change color, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
So I just decided to keep my mouth shut for a very long time.
What happened when you finally told them?
Well, I have still to tell my brothers and sisters. They don't know. Unless, okay. You know, I have my own radio show now. It started back in September. By the way, it's on Contact Talk Radio, www.contacttalkradio.com. And I'm on live Friday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. So they have happened to stumble upon it. They know about it now. I did tell my mother back about 10 or 11 years ago when I started working with the FBI, because I just had this funny feeling that somebody was going to show up my mother's house asking her all sorts of questions. I think that now is the time to come out of the closet and tell her this story.
Right.
She said that she believed me, but can you imagine this phone call? Hey, Mom, I never told you this, but I'm psychic. I see dead people, and I've been working with the FBI. I mean, can you imagine this phone call?
Yeah.
It was an interesting one.
I bet it was. Yeah.
She said, okay, well, why didn't you tell me when you were in high school? I said, oh, please, don't even go there. You know, you would have locked me up in a convent. Oh, no, your father and I would have been okay with it. And I said, yeah, right. Okay. You know, hindsight is 20/20. And as time goes by, I guess they felt that, you know, my mother felt that they would have accepted it, but no.
Right. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you today, and I appreciate you being, so forthcoming in your answers to my questions. So I'm going to pass you off to Melissa, who's got some questions for you, too.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Cheryl. Hi,
okay.
Jennifer. Hi, Melissa.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, and this is a treat for me. I mean, we have a little bit of history here, but I do have some questions for you. The first one is, I know you talked a lot about keeping your abilities a secret, and I can definitely understand that. But I wanted to know exactly what was the experience that you had at 16 that kind of let you know that you had these abilities, and then, how did you handle it internally?
You know, what's really funny is that I don't even remember what happened first. I don't even remember the very first psychic experience that I had. All I can remember back when I was 16, I know I'm making it sound like I'm 100 years old, but when I was 16, I just remember picking up things that really were not all that important. Like I would know somebody's name before I would be introduced to them. Or I might know something minor about a person and then find out that it was true. For some very strange reason, it didn't faze me. My blood pressure is only about 80 over 60 on a good day. So sometimes I think that my blood pressure is so low that nothing freaks me out that much. Maybe that's why I pick up this information. But strangely, I don't remember being upset about it. I didn't get scared. I wasn't concerned. I didn't think that I was going crazy. I just rolled with it. When I was a little girl, my mother used to jokingly tell me that she was going to take me to a child psychiatrist because she said that I was always too calm and that nothing ever bothered me.
Wow.
So, you know, I just said, oh, okay, well, I'm hearing people's names before I meet them. Okay, I can handle that. Next. And I don't remember being upset about it. Which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, actually, a very good thing. It shows wisely. So with that, it really sounds like it happened quite naturally for you, and you've definitely gone from hearing people's names before you meet them or knowing their names before you meet them, small little things, to now, you know, doing wonderful things. I mean, the police work that you do and the readings that you do to help people, you know, to the general public. how did you go from A to B? I mean, how did you strengthen those abilities? Was it a natural progression? Is there a timeline between year 1 and 7 or year 1 and 5? How did you go from, you know, those small little things in the very beginning into where you are today?
Okay, that's a good question. I did not try to do anything to increase this ability for decades. Literally, I was not interested at all in having increased psychic ability. So from age 16 through my 20s, through my 30s, I really didn't care whether I had it or not. It was helpful from time to time, but I had absolutely no interest in increasing my ability. I did not read books. I didn't meditate. I didn't do anything. I used to go to psychics and because I believed in them, but I thought that they were so good, and I, you know, I was just a person who happened to have a little bit of intuitive ability. And I always thought there's no way I could ever be a psychic. There's just absolutely no way. One thing that I can say is that I have noticed on the average about every 7 years, my ability seems to increase. I've noticed a ramping up. And for no apparent reason. I can remember being in my 30s, for instance, and for a couple of years having these experiences in which dreams that I had had, and I'm talking about dreams that I had had when I was a kid, age 10, age 12, age 7, all started pouring back into my brain.
Wow.
It's like they were being downloaded, and I had no clue what was going on. I'd just be sitting at a traffic light, you know, behind the wheel of the car, just waiting for the light to turn green. And all of a sudden, I would start seeing in my head a dream that I had had as a kid. And I said, what the heck is going on? And I actually went to a psychic whom I respected. She was a very wise woman. And I said, what, Rose, is happening with me? She said, your channel is getting stronger. So I've had a number of interesting things like that happen. And then when I was about 40, that's when the dead people started showing up. And I had seen dead people just from time to time. Prior to that, why at age 40 they started showing up in busloads, I have no idea. And that's when things really got scary, because that's when I started picking up the criminal stuff. Now, as far as what happened after that, right around the time I started having these mediumistic experiences and picking up the criminal information, I was, you know, scared to death. There was a young man by the name of John Edward who was now going on the talk shows, and he had just come out with his first book. And I saw him on Larry King one night, and I said, "Oh my God, I'm having experiences that are similar to his, the mediumistic experiences." So I started reading books then. That's when I started reading everything that I could get my hands on. That's when I started meditating. That's when I became interested in developing this, because I thought that if I did not get control of it with all of this horrible criminal information that was coming in every night, that I was going to lose my mind. Like, I felt like I had to get it under control.
Mm-hmm. Well, you brought up a good point, and it kind of leads to one of the questions that I had. And you know, you mentioned that your channel is getting stronger, or it opened up. If you can kind of explain, or kind of the differences of either how it feels or how it looks to you or how it comes in, the difference between a psychic message and a mediumistic message.
Okay. Well, first of all, a psychic message is different from regular thought in that it's an override, okay? You may be, let's say, in the food store saying to yourself, okay, I need spaghetti, I need bread, I need broccoli, and then all of a sudden a piece of information will start popping into your mind out of the blue, and that is how you know that you're receiving psychic information, because it tends to override or cancel out the thoughts that you were having at that particular time. So when I see things psychically, I see pictures in my head. Sometimes they look like a snapshot. Sometimes it looks like a video is being downloaded into my brain. Sometimes I hear things psychically. To be honest, picking up information mediumistically is not all that different. For instance, if I'm doing a reading for somebody and their dead uncle starts to come through, I can see in my mind's eye a man showing up, and I might be able to hear him say the word uncle, Okay. But there is one difference. Many times when I'm doing a reading for somebody and a dead person starts to come through, off to my right-hand side, it's usually my right, I start to feel this little spark of energy. And I'm sure that everybody out there has seen The Wizard of Oz. And you know how Glinda the Good Witch would start to show up as a bubble, and she would morph, and the bubble would get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then all of a sudden you've got Glinda standing there? That's kind of like what happens. I feel this spark of energy in the room, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it morphs into what feels like, to my right, the size of a human being. Although I cannot see them, in my mind's eye, I can see them. And sometimes it's as if I am seeing them through a veil. I cannot see their features very clearly, and that's when they start giving me information, perhaps how they passed, what their name was, and so on and so forth.
Wow, really cool. That was a good good analogy, nice imagery, Glinda the Good Witch. I know everybody can relate to that. So that leads to kind of the next question. You talked a little bit about how things come in, but the big question for me, I think, is interpretation. How do you, every psychic medium, from what I understand, have their own language, and, you know, how do you interpret time frames, you know, accuracy of, you know, 6 months as opposed to 6 years as opposed to 6 days? What kind of system do you use to be able to help you, or that you've developed over the years to help you interpret?
Okay, that's a good one, because learning to interpret what you're seeing is one of the toughest things about this. Whether you're just picking up psychic information or you're doing medium work, both, it's tough. See, a lot of people think that when people die and they cross over, that they can speak in perfect sentences and they can speak in the King's English, and that they're getting to this place called heaven and everything's perfect over there and powerful, and that those of us here should be able to hear things in complete sentences from the other side. It doesn't work that way. It appears that it's a language that the dead people need to learn over there when they want to communicate with those of us here. So that's why it feels like a game of charades. That's why they show you pictures. Or if somebody is trying to come through from the other side and their name began with an A, they'll show me a great big letter A. It's like it's made out of wood and they may be holding it in their hands, or like a poster with the letter A. So it's very hard in the beginning to understand what the symbols mean. For instance, if I am psychically seeing a person and they are standing at a road which has a fork in front of them, that usually means that the person for whom I'm doing a reading, that they have two options. They have two choices ahead of them. Okay. It really takes a lot of practice. It really stumped me in the beginning when I started, especially when the dead people started showing up, the symbols they were sending me, for the life of me, I could not understand a lot of them. Practice, practice, practice. And the really tough part in the beginning is that I was only working with the police. I wasn't doing readings for people. If you tell an FBI agent, listen, I'm seeing a pumpkin, I'm seeing a shopping cart from the food store, and I'm seeing a red Buick, the FBI agent's going to look at you and say, okay. And they cannot confirm or deny that anything that you just told them means anything.
Wow.
So they can't tell you, okay, I think I know where she's going with the pumpkin. The fugitive is living on a farm where there's a pumpkin patch in the back, and the red Buick was a getaway car, and the shopping cart means that the guy has a job now working in the food store. They can't tell you that. So it was even tougher when I got started, because I just would see these things and pass them on, and I didn't know what they meant, and the FBI agents could not give me feedback as to whether I was correct or what the stuff meant. So it's really, it has been dealing with the general public and doing readings for them that I have started to understand what a lot of these symbols mean.
Wow, that sounds like being pushed in water and saying swim.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. But then I guess on the other end of that too, it actually really helps you sharpen your skills quickly because of how you have to pull and I guess and interpret and then go on what you really are seeing or feeling as opposed to, you know, is there ever that point where doubt comes in? Am I really seeing this or is it, are these my ideas or have you, through your process, you just kind of, as you grow in ability, you kind of move past the whole doubt or am I crazy or is this real?
The doubt part is one of the toughest things to deal with. And that of course comes from not wanting to believe maybe in the beginning that you are actually receiving psychic information. And then also the doubt ties into, okay, what do these symbols mean? One of the things that I learned from working with the FBI was to not to try to interpret what I was seeing, just tell them exactly what I was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I would just say, hey guys, this is what I'm seeing. And you know, I know that you can't comment on it, but you think out of the box, think symbolically, do not think literally, and think about what this information may mean, and it can help you. I mean, there were times when I received very, very specific information about bad guys, and they knew exactly what I was talking about. One of the first times that I went to the FBI, I was picking up information on a guy who was on the 10 most wanted list. It was an American who had left the country. And I find, you know, I've been picking up a lot of information about him. I finally summoned up the courage to go into the FBI and tell them that I had been receiving information about this. Now, mind you, when I went into the FBI, none of my friends knew about this, that I had psychic ability, nobody in my family. So I came out of the closet to an FBI agent about being psychic. But I said, I'm picking up information on this particular guy. I'm not going to mention his name on the air. And he said, okay, where is he? I said, he's in Great Britain. So
wow.
The information that I got was very specific. And I gave them very specific information. I said, he's working as a carpenter. So not all of the information is very fuzzy and vague. And as it turns out, the guy had been in Great Britain and he had been working as a carpenter. But developing the faith and the skill to believe that what you are seeing is real and then trying to understand it and interpret it takes time. It's practice. So I would say to anybody out there who is listening, if you feel that you are having psychic experiences and where you want to develop this, practice with a friend. Of course, finding a like-minded friend is not always easy, but practice with a friend and say, I'd like to see if I can pick up information on, let's say, your deceased loved ones, and you can tell the friend what you're seeing, and then you can get instant confirmation as to whether you're correct or not.
That's good advice. That's very good advice, actually. And, okay, two more questions. And tell us a little bit about your show and how you sort of came into having the show and where it is and what kinds of topics and things that you do on your show.
Okay. Yes, I am live on Friday nights on a website called www.contacttalkradio.com. And I do an hour-long show. It's on Friday night. It's 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, because I'm here on the East Coast. And I talk every week, usually for the first 20 minutes, about a variety of topics. For instance, this past week and then this coming Friday night, I will be talking about some of the things that I learned when I was down in Guatemala and Honduras. And then I take live calls. So I have people calling in, asking me psychic questions on the spot. So that was a little intimidating at first. You know, it's one thing to do a psychic reading at a fair or on the phone, but going live on air with everybody listening, it was a little scary at first. And I've had guests on the program as well. As a matter of fact, Melissa Watts, the lady who was asking me these questions, she was on my very first program. And she was talking about her work as a hypnotherapist. So I do have guests on from time to time, and it's something that I've been thinking about doing for a couple of years, and I said, oh, gosh, no, there's no way, no way am I going to ever do a radio show. I'm not going to get on the air and do live readings, and here I am.
And it is, I tell you, it is a wonderful show, and I encourage all the listeners of Paranormal Underground who are listening to the podcast today to really kind of take a listen to it. It's a great show, lots of information, lots of interesting topics. from week to week. And Jennifer is a lot of fun. And my last question is, tell us about future projects or when and where we can see you in person or any other projects that you may have in the works.
Okay. Well, if you are in Queens, New York, I am going to be on the Queens Cablevision. I forget what channel it is. I think it's channel number 34. There is a program called Psychic Awakenings, and I taped a lecture back in the fall, which just started airing on Psychic Awakenings on the Queens, New York cable station. So you can see me there. I don't know the times. It's probably being played at all different times during the day. I do psychic fairs in the New York area, usually the first Sunday of every month. I am up in the White Plains area. If you're in that neck of the woods, you can come see me. There's a restaurant there called Antony's where I do readings. I also do psychic fairs in New York City and out on Long Island. And if you want to be put on my mailing list and find out when I am doing events like this, you can send me an email. I'll give you the email address. It's jhmediumrare@gmail.com. That's jhmediumrare@gmail.com. And I have also taught psychic development classes in New York City, and I'm getting a lot of requests for that now. People are saying, when are you going to do that again? So I'm thinking about doing that this spring, or actually probably in the summertime, maybe in July or August. So I may be teaching a class like that in the New York City area. So if you're interested, just send me an email, and I will keep you posted.
And I will add to that. I've had the honor and the privilege to be a part of those classes, and they were absolutely wonderful. Some of the best classes that I've taken. So if you are in the area, to please take advantage of that. I had a great time, learned a lot, and please do. Well, Jennifer, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And right now I would like to hand it off to Annie. Annie, take
it from here,
please.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Annie.
I've just got a couple, but growing up, you watch movies and TV and read books, and the medium or the psychic has to touch somebody, and they get this big rush of some sort of vision, and they're knocked off their feet and everything. And yet, from what I've learned now, through listening to gracious people like you who do shows like this, it's not like that.
Right.
Readings can be done from a distance. How does that work? What is the connection?
I don't need one. That's me, though. Okay. There are psychics and mediums that do need to have the person face to face, or they do need to be touching the person, or they do need to be touching something that belonged to the person or belongs to the person. Okay. So why some psychics need that connection and others don't, I don't know. It just may be the way that that particular psychic's brain is wired. But for me, it makes no difference whether I'm on the phone with somebody or on the internet doing my radio show, or if I have the person face to face. I can pick up the energy. It's like sensing energy. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And mm-hmm. I can feel the person's energy. It's interesting. A couple of years ago, I did my first telephone reading outside the United States. I had somebody from Trinidad who wanted a psychic reading, and I thought, okay, this will be interesting, because every phone reading I've done has been with somebody who's on the continental United States or North America. And I got on the phone with this person, and it was as if they were in the same room with me.
Okay.
So distance, for some reason with me, does not seem to be an issue. If I do have somebody in front of me, I don't need to be holding something of theirs. For some people, I think it's the door that opens up their channel is when they're holding onto the person's ring or the person's hand.
All right. Okay. On the crime end of it, the criminal activity, if a heinous crime has been committed, do you think, and maybe this sounds dumb or something, I don't know, but do you think the area itself is traumatized by the crime?
You know, I've heard people say that who are psychics. Yeah, you know, I've seen TV programs where psychics who do police work can go to a crime scene and they can feel what happened, and they do say that they feel that the site has been traumatized. When I was in Guatemala and Honduras at these old Mayan sites, I mean, these people were violent. Okay, they executed people. They whacked people's heads off all the time. They were not a, you know, warm and fuzzy group of people down there. So I really wondered if I was going to psychically feel that kind of energy when I was down there, and I did not. Also, what's interesting about the Mayans is that around the year 822 A.D., they all started disappearing from these magnificent old cities, and nobody knows exactly why. The general consensus is that there may have been a drought, there wasn't enough water, there wasn't enough in the way of crops like corn, because that was the primary staple of their diet. So they just may have died off, and those people who managed to live just went off into the jungle. So I did not feel the trauma when I was down there of starvation or fear or hunger or, you know, deprivation. However, I did have a really weird, weird experience on the Intrepid. And for those of you out there who are listening, the Intrepid is an aircraft carrier that was in service in World War II, and it is now stationed in New York City. And it did a lot of time out in the Pacific during World War II, and I did not know this, but it had been hit by not one but several kamikaze planes, and they had just flown those planes right into the Intrepid. And I was in an area in the Intrepid, and all of a sudden I felt like I was gasping for air. Like I was suffocating, and I felt like if I did not get outside on deck that I was going to faint. I just felt this incredible heat and this incredible sense of despair and fear, and I literally ran out onto the deck. And I found out later that the room that I had been standing in was an interior compartment of the ship that had gotten a direct hit from a kamikaze plane, and that many men had perished inside that room. They had burned to death. So
that sounds like perhaps that was traumatized. Maybe the cultural is opposed to something more personal.
Right. Maybe it's the immediacy of it. I mean, World War II was not that long ago, and maybe enough time goes by. You know, hundreds of years go by. Maybe an area is not as traumatized. Now, I've heard many stories, and many TV shows have been made about that kind of energy, that traumatized energy in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've, you know, heard stories of this, because the Battle of Gettysburg in the Civil War, I forget how many thousands of men died. It was a bloody, horrible, horrible sight. Yeah. And even to this day, people visit that area, and there have been so many strange, unexplainable things that have happened there, and that area does seem to be traumatized.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
I'm just going to ask you a few questions, nothing too deep. Do you believe that we die once, you know, never to return, or are we born again, you know, maybe in reincarnation or something?
Well, I see dead people, so trust me, we come back. You know, we don't just die once. I feel like we come back over and over again. So, okay. And that's the vibe I get from the other side. I do feel that all of us here have been on this planet many times before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what are your thoughts on soul groups and soul contracts?
Soul groups and soul contracts, meaning
People
who feel that they were together in a past life.
Or maybe you've made a contract with them to help you learn a lesson in this life.
I'm open to anything. I think that that may exist.
Okay.
You know, I'm probably not the best person to answer that question. Somebody like Melissa actually is, because she does past life regression. I really don't pick up on people's past lives psychically. Once in a blue moon, I will. And I've had people say to me, who was I in a past life? And for the life of me, I can't tell them, you know. So I think that a person who does past life regression would know more about this than I do. I think that there probably are soul groups and soul mm-hmm. contracts. But when I pick up from people on the other side who are deceased, yeah. I don't really hear them talking about it. But that doesn't mean anything. It just may mean that I'm not the best person to be relaying that kind of information.
Well, I just wonder if it'd be possible, like for somebody who's passed over, for them to be talking about maybe somebody on this earth, but maybe they're talking about them in a past life. Maybe that's why the information doesn't always connect.
Now, most of the information that I get from the deceased seem to be about people who are in the here and now. Okay. Yes. Also, one of the things that happens, too, is when I pick up on people who are deceased, I really don't go further back than like the great-grandfather, great-grandmother okay. generation. Like, I haven't had Benjamin Franklin show up.
Oh, okay.
I haven't had Napoleon show up. I haven't had, you know, your dead relatives from 500 years ago show up. It seems that there is a limit when you're okay. a medium as okay. to how many generations we're going to go back and how these people are connected to you.
Or maybe you can't because maybe they're already back on this earth in another life.
That may be right. You may be absolutely right. So that may be why.
Okay. What do you think our ultimate purpose for being here? I mean,
yeah, that's a good one. You know, the thing about human beings is that we are the only species on this planet that can really create. We have birds and dogs and cats and dolphins and whales, and they do not write symphonies. They do not build buildings. They do not come up with cures for diseases. Mm-hmm. Are they less than human beings? Absolutely not. And that's one of the big problems that I have with the human race is that I think that people like to think that humans are at the top of the food chain or pecking order and that they look down on animals. I just think that that is the main difference between us and every other species on this planet. A bird may build a nest, a beaver might build a dam, but human beings have been given this incredible gift to create. So mm-hmm. in answer to your question, what are we here for? I think we are here to create. Unfortunately, okay. we create things too, like wars and yeah. Prejudicial situations and poverty and hatred. So we have this incredible gift to create. I don't know if we're using it to the best of our ability. Hopefully, the Mayans were right, and this new 5,200-year cycle that's going to begin soon will usher in a period of more positive creation.
Yeah, I've noticed how it seems like things go through cycles. And, you know, there's what they call spiritual revolutions where people become more spiritual. Yeah, I just, why do you think we lost that connection?
My feeling, and this is what, going back to what we were talking about in the beginning of the show, mm-hmm. is that I think that human beings, in order to survive and make it just through life, and I'm talking about way back in the day when people were yeah. living in caves and catching their dinner in the forest with their bare hands, they needed to have all of their metaphysical skills going just to be able to live, to outrun a predator or to find food or water. The shamans or the medicine men and women of the American Indian tribes, that was one of their jobs because these people moved around. So it was the shaman's job to find that source of water or where the buffalo herd might be or a safe place to set up camp. So I think that using metaphysical skills was something that was an absolute necessity way back mm-hmm. in the day. And my gut feeling is that as people became more civilized, and actually I'm going to be talking about this topic on this Friday night show,
okay.
and they started congregating more in groups, in settlements, in small cities, and feeling safer, and then having, let's say, a group of people within their society who would do all the farming, that freed up time for those people over there to be the woodworkers or that person over there to be the one who worked with iron or metal and that person over there to be the group's astronomer or religious person. I think that as people got more civilized and had safer lives, that year in, year out, these abilities started to fade away. And yeah. that's why we live in this civilization now, or this Western civilization now, where rational, logical thinking is so prized above intuition, and people look down upon intuition and snicker at it.
I think it's changing.
Oh, I do too. And I think this may be the shift that the Mayans were possibly talking about with this new cycle beginning soon.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's all I got. I'll turn you back over to Karen.
Okay.
Jennifer, you kindly agreed to do a reading for us while you were with us, just so people could kind of get a sense of what it is that you do. I thought that Annie would be a good subject for the reading, so I'm going to let the two of you talk to do that. So Annie, I think Jennifer wanted you to start off with a question, and then we'll go from there. So go ahead, Annie.
Yeah, the question I have is there anything I could have done that would have made a difference?
Okay. Well, here's what I do, Annie. When I start to answer any kind of question or focus on somebody, I get quiet. What I'm doing now, and of course people at home cannot see me doing this, I'm letting my mind go blank. And I use a form of mental telepathy. I am sending this question out to the cosmos, to the universe, whatever you want to call it, to the dead people, the other side. And I'm asking your question. Basically, I view myself as, let's say, being a simultaneous translator at the United Nations. I'm just taking the language of the dead and translating it into English. If you hear silence, it's just me waiting to pick up information. And your question is there anything that you could have done that would have made a difference?
Yes.
Okay. I'm feeling a female energy coming through from the other side. Is there a woman on the other side who, before her passing, I feel like she was not mentally altogether there, like she had Alzheimer's or a terrible senility, or she's indicating to me that prior to her passing, she just really was not cognizant as to what was going on. Is this ringing a bell? You've got to think back, because this could be a great grandmother. I feel like she's related to you.
Not that I know of.
Okay, because we're going back. We're going back in time. Actually, I'm getting a great aunt kind of feeling with this lady. So she seems to be stepping forward to answer your question. Okay.
I used to hear stories that I had a great, great aunt who used to sit on the porch and cackle during thunderstorms. She was considered kind of nuts. I never knew her, but that was the story.
Okay. Well, I'm getting an aunt vibe, because what they're showing me is one of my aunts. And this is how they send me, you know, this is like Melissa's question. How do you understand the symbols? If I see one of my aunts as I'm pulling in this woman's energy, that means aunt. Okay. Okay. And I don't know, Annie, if you can ask anybody in your family if prior to this lady's passing that she was, you know, had a bad problem with Alzheimer's or senility. Sometimes people become very ill with cancer, and they're just heavily doped up, so they're not together mentally prior to their passing. Do you understand what I'm saying? But she's, I don't feel like her passing was sudden. I feel like prior to her passing, she had been ill for some time. We're just not all together there mentally. And she comes in around you. So she seems to be the one who wants to answer this question. What did you say? She used to sit on the front porch and cackle during thunderstorms?
Yeah, and just, she was considered the crazy one of the family generations ago, I guess. That's a story we heard, you know, as kids.
Why? Did she have psychic ability?
I have no idea. I really don't.
The family nut. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let me just focus on her. I'm asking your question to her. Is there anything Annie could have done that would have made a difference? By the way, Annie, where do you live? Is there any kind of Colorado connection to you or the West?
No.
You're in New York?
Yeah.
Okay, because she pulls me out towards, she's pulling me for some reason out towards like Colorado, Nevada, and Mexico. I'm asking your question, is there anything you could have done to make a difference? And she seems to be interested in talking about other things, okay? So let me just roll with this, and we'll try to get to your question in just a minute. She pulls me to the southwestern part of the United States, and she says it has something to do with you. I don't know if you're planning a trip there, like to Sedona, or if you're going to be doing any metaphysical work, but there's some connection. Oh, I understand. Okay. There is some kind of connection that you are going to have to that part of the United States coming up, okay? She's not, okay, she just gave me the number 3. This may be within the next 3 years, all right? So just take it and put it aside and...
That does make sense on something completely different.
Oh, okay. Are you planning a trip there, or is there any kind of connection there, or is there somebody you know who's going to move there? Because she keeps drawing a line between where you are now and to that part of the world.
My son and his ex-significant other are battling over their child right now. He's 4, and they are in Arizona.
Oh, okay. Because this lady points to that part of the country and indicates that there's a lot of energy there. Now, do you ever travel out there to see their child?
No, my son does. The child is with us now.
Oh, I see.
Yes, it's going
okay.
on up here.
Because what this may mean, and the reason this lady, who seems to be your great aunt, is showing me this, is that this may mean that the child ends up out there. Is that one of the things that they're fighting about? Because they indicate that you travel out there.
Yeah. That's another big thing, yeah.
So, I don't know if this is happy news for you, that the child may not end up being in the New York area and may be spending time out there. But they keep pulling you out to that part of the world, okay? You may end up getting involved in this battle because they draw the connection to you and that situation there. But, you know, I also do feel that there is something coming your way that's pleasant coming out of that part of the world. So you may feel that it just may be about your son and the situation right now, but there may be something highly positive with you connected to that area. Okay. Yes. They keep saying something metaphysical. So this just may be part of your spiritual development. You may end up taking some courses out there or traveling out there. Okay, I'm asking your great aunt if she'll answer your question. Is there anything that Annie could have done that would have made a difference? This lady keeps giving me the initial A, and I don't think it's about you, Annie. I don't know if this lady's initial was A, if there's a bunch of A's over there, but she keeps giving me the initial A. Is there anything Annie could have done? Just bear with me. I'm waiting for her answer.
All right.
The answer is no. She's saying no. She says she's in it. What I see you is that you're running around in circles. Whatever the situation is, because you're, and I don't know what the situation is. I don't need to know. I just see you running around in circles like a nut, like a dog chasing its tail. Do you understand this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you just kept going around and around and around and around with the situation, no matter what it was. And I don't feel that there was anything that you could have done to change it. Okay, she's nodding her head from the other side. She's saying, yes, I understood this correctly. I feel that whatever the situation was, there was an element of deception coming from somebody who was involved in it. Do you understand this?
Mm-hmm.
And that this person was deceiving you, and you shouldn't blame yourself for not being able to see what they were up to or what they were pulling off. Does this make sense?
In a way, yes.
Okay. Like she's saying, don't beat yourself up for not being a mind reader. You know, there were, she's saying that this situation was just, something, there was really nothing more that you could have done. Okay. Let me just see if she has anything else to say on this topic. Also, is there somebody around you, either here or on the other side, although it feels like they're here, with a substance abuse problem? Or they're just maybe drinking a little bit too much, or they're doing drugs. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Okay. Because she points to that person. Now, I cannot tell if this person with the substance abuse problem is part of this question that you're asking, or is this a separate topic?
It's the same topic.
It is the same person. Okay. Because sometimes when they present this stuff to me, I can't.
It's the main part of the question, but it.
Oh. Okay, so there is the person that she's showing me with the substance abuse problem is associated with the question, could you have done anything to make a difference?
Yes.
Okay. Just bear with me. I'm asking this lady more questions. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm just picking up the energy of the person with the substance abuse. And I get a very strong, willful feeling around this person. I just feel that they don't want to listen to anything. They just, They think they know what's going on, and that's it. And what your great aunt is indicating to me is that this person with the substance abuse problem would not have listened anyhow. Does this make sense?
No.
Because I'm seeing the person with the substance abuse putting their hands over their ears. Were there other people who have tried to speak to this person about the situation? Because I'm getting this feeling of communication not making it to the person with the problem, at least from some.
The substance abuse had a basis for being.
Okay.
You can understand that.
Okay. So well, right. Let me just ask this lady to clarify this, because she seems to really want to talk about this particular person. Bear with me. I'm just waiting for her to tell me more.
Had to be my crazy aunt.
I'm seeing a lot of scenes playing out in my head right now. I'm just asking her to get down to the problem here. The person with the substance abuse . She keeps giving me the letter S. I don't know why. S is in Sam. I don't know why she keeps giving me that letter. Was there somebody around the person with the substance abuse? Was there somebody around them with the letter S that you know of? Because she keeps giving me this letter as if it's the first initial of somebody's name around this person.
I can't pull anybody up.
Okay, just keep it in mind. But basically, when I just keep asking her this question, is there anything else that Annie could have done? She keeps saying no, no. What she's indicating is that, you know, and in a way I don't like even saying things like this because it just sounds so fatalistic, but this person was meant to do what they did and to live the life that they lived, even though it may have been painful for other people to see.
They didn't do anything, though.
No, but what I'm saying is that this person was on a path, the person with the substance abuse problem, and whatever situation that they ended up in, unfortunately,
no.
that was kind of their path in life. Okay.
No.
Let me just see if she has anything else to say about this. Do you have a question, by the way, that you would like to ask her about this situation or something else?
Yeah. Why did she abuse her prescription drugs in the first place?
Let's find out.
I mean, I know the answer, so she should too, maybe, but she's crazy, so it's hard to say.
So are you suggesting that the information is not going to be clear because it's the crazy great aunt? Let's just see what she has to say. Why did she abuse? I don't know if she'll answer this question, but let's just see if she can. Why did she abuse the prescription drugs in the first place? Well, whoever this person was who is doing this, I just feel that this person didn't even think in the beginning that they were abusing them. I just think that they said, well, I could just do a little more. But she's not answering the question why. She's not answering the question why. I feel like this person felt safe in the beginning in abusing them. But she's not giving me the reason why the person continued to get deeper into the problem.
Well, that was really a small aspect of it, because she was self-medicating for pain from another thing. So,
now she's not giving me the reason for the use of the prescription, the misuse, I should say, the prescription drugs. The interesting thing is, when you're talking to people who are deceased, they don't always give you the answer for everything. And I've even had them put their fingers to their lips from the other side and say, I'm not going to tell you that. So basically she's saying, no, there's nothing that you could have done. And she indicates that she knows that it was around this person who had the problem with the substance abuse, but does not show me exactly why this happened. Oh, hold on a second. Here she goes. Well, she's showing me things that are not pertinent to the question. I don't know why she's showing me what looks like a bunch of ladies sitting around playing bridge or canasta. Okay. Do you remember card games back in the day with your great aunt or the lady who had the problem with the prescription drugs? Were they was she a card player? Why do I see people playing cards? Does this mean anything to you?
No, I never met this great aunt. She died before I was born.
Mm-hmm. This may be of some significance. I don't know why, but I see ladies sitting at a card table playing bridge or canasta or mahjong or whatever the game of the day was. Did this great aunt know this lady who misused the prescription drugs?
No. No, she
was. Did they ever know each other? Okay, so they would not have played cards together. I don't know why she does this, but sometimes they throw things at me like this, and you will understand the significance of it later. I don't understand the significance.
How much do you want me to tell you?
You can tell me more if you'd like, because we don't have a lot of time, but I don't want you to tell me too much.
Well, this was my 19-year-old daughter.
Okay.
And she died from acute lymphocytic leukemia.
I'm sorry, she died of what?
Acute lymphocytic leukemia.
Oh, okay, because you broke up a little bit. Go ahead.
And she was diagnosed at 14 and died at 19, 4 years
okay.
ago.
Well, I think that what your great aunt was suggesting in the beginning is that when she said this was your daughter's path, it meant that it was her path not to take the drugs, but to have this disease, unfortunately. That's why I say I don't like sometimes saying this, because it just sounds so cold. But this path in life of just being here for a short time, this was a life she would have chosen, okay, or that was chosen for her before she came here. And actually, Melissa, who does past life regression, could fill you in more on why we come into this lifetime and choose what really seems like a horrible situation. What's interesting is when I picked up your great aunt's energy and she talked about the situation, the first thing she talked about was not your daughter's disease. It was the drug use or the substance use. So I don't know if that has been something that has been, you know, bothering you over these years.
Not really, because we were to the point she was in pain and everything. It was like, you know, sweetie, you get healthy, cure the cancer, and we'll throw you into Betty Ford if that's necessary. You know, I mean, at that point,
yeah,
we didn't care.
Right.
I mean, she went through almost 5 years with it, and it's a tough road.
Mm-hmm. Very painful one. Let's just see if your great aunt has something to say about that. What's interesting is your great aunt's energy came through and not your daughter's. And what happens sometimes on the other side is it takes some people a couple of years to be able to communicate, sometimes 10 years. I've done readings for people, and they lost somebody like the day before, literally, or the week before, they lost somebody who died, and the person has come through like gangbusters. What I have found from the other side is that people will come through who act as an escort or an interpreter. Your daughter may not be well-versed on the other side with the language of the dead. So the great aunt, because she's been over there longer, may be a better communicator.
Katie would have picked a crazy great aunt.
to hang out with and to pass
but
the
But we have seen her.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's not surprising.
He has manipulated things. One question I have, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that people are trapped here.
Mm-hmm. Do I hear that?
No, but this is what we hear. You know, they didn't go into the light. They're trapped here. I had another psychic tell me, see, he says, you know, you're not keeping Katie here. If she's here, it's because she wants to be with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you have felt her presence, if that means that she's trapped here. My feeling about the other side is that the other side exists on this plane. They can see us, but we really can't see them all that easily.
Mm-hmm.
So It to me, it just seems like if you have felt your daughter's presence and strange things have happened, it doesn't mean that she's stuck on this plane. It just means that it's a visit from the other side. She shows up, you feel her presence, and then she goes right back to the other side of the veil.
Right. So, she's learned to come and go, perhaps, and because I think it's a learning experience on the other side, as you've said.
It is. And some people cannot, when they're dead, they cannot communicate well with mediums, and other people can. I'll be doing a reading for somebody, and Uncle Joe will come in, and the person will say, oh, I hated Uncle Joe. I never knew Uncle Joe. Why is he here? Well, the answer is he may be the best person on the other side who can speak my language, okay? So people are always kind of puzzled as to why the crazy great aunt shows up, or Uncle Joe, or somebody in the family that they couldn't stand or never met. But that person who is now dead may be the best person to communicate with me, okay? So mm-hmm. I am not surprised that your great aunt showed up and not your daughter. That is not unusual. But it also does not surprise me that you have felt her presence.
Right.
Okay, because people will, after they pass, definitely try to spend time with the people that love them here.
The worst, because I have ups and downs with it, even after 4 years, it's pretty much mm-hmm. destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
And the worse my pain is, the less I feel her.
Yeah, and that's another thing, Annie. You cannot make these people show up at will. I cannot. I mean, there have been times I've been crying my eyes out over a situation that has had me upset, and I've literally begged my dead grandmother to show up and give me advice, and she just doesn't show up. So you can't make people just show up. And they will show up when they're good and ready. And why they do it at sometimes and then disappear and you don't see them again for a couple of years or a couple of weeks or months is beyond me. Okay. It just really doesn't make any sense, but they show up in their own time. What have you felt with her around you, her presence, or has anything strange happened?
Oh, yeah. I wear her rings, her school ring and stuff. I wore on my right hand. And one morning I got up and I was having my morning coffee and Siggy and trying to get my chemical levels up. And all of a sudden, my left hand felt very heavy, and I looked over, and her school ring was on top of my wedding ring on my left hand.
Oh, my gosh.
I had not dreamt of jewelry. I mean, I didn't remember dreaming about Katie. I mean, it was just really bizarre, and I've left it there ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yes, strange things like that definitely can happen. But I think your question was, do people get trapped here?
Well, that's what the general consensus is, that, you know, they're trapped here, that we need to help them get to where they belong and stuff. And I just don't buy that anymore.
No, I feel my opinion is that they just cross over and they're over there and that's it. Although I did do a very strange reading about 2 weeks ago in which a man came through. He was deceased and he said, I'm still here. I haven't crossed over yet. And when I told this to the woman for whom I was doing a reading, she practically let out a scream because she had a dream the night before I did the reading for her in which this man who is dead said to her in the dream, I haven't crossed over yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very weird experience for me. And I just had this 2 weeks ago. That's the first time I've ever heard something like that. And she said, Jennifer, I swear I saw this guy's dead cold body in the coffin before they put him in the ground. I said, well, I don't think that's what he means. I think that his spirit is still on this plane. There were an awful lot of nasty things going on with this man's will and his estate. But he appeared to her and yet another person in the family in dreams saying, I have not crossed over yet. And he said the same thing to me. And then I passed it on. And so it was a very strange experience.
I really feel that Katie, I know she was my daughter, but I really feel that she was my soulmate.
Mm-hmm. It's quite possible. And like I said, I don't really pick up that kind of information with people. I don't pick up whether they were soulmates in a former life or anything like that. So if you were, I probably would not pick up on that. Again, that's something that somebody who does past life regression like Melissa would probably be able to tell you for sure.
We were somewhat deceived. The deception did end up into it because the doctors made terrible mistakes at the end.
Oh, okay.
And sent her home after intensive chemo, and it was a very traumatic passing. I mean, it was as bad as if she'd been killed in an accident or
something.
Oh,
for goodness sake. What did they do? Misdiagnose the problem?
No, they just sent her home after intensive chemo, and her platelet count was 1, which meant 1,000.
Oh, I see.
About 100,000, and in the middle of the night at home, she went into a brain bleed.
I see. So they should not have sent her home.
Right. And I fought for 24 hours trying to get them to keep her in, and no one would listen to me. I literally was running around like a chicken with my head cut off, and I could not get anyone to listen. But
okay.
I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in shock that she'd relapsed yet again,
mm-hmm.
and I gave in.
Okay. Well, this is kind of making sense to me now, because I just saw you running around and just getting nowhere with this particular problem. And your great aunt was indicating that there was something like an outside force or person who was not doing something right. And deception was the word she used, but I think that you're explaining why this happened. So is that what led to her passing, is that the doctors let her go?
They let her go home, yeah. If they kept her in, they could have given platelets and stuff, monitored her stuff. Maybe we would have only had her maybe another month or so, but it would have been another month for us.
So is that why you asked the question, could anything I've done would have made a difference?
Yeah.
And that's why your great aunt is saying absolutely not. She said no.
It feels like there has to be someone to blame, and if the powers that be won't take it, you tend to take it on yourself, especially when it's your kid.
Right. Or what other people would be doing, and they'd be screaming and yelling and being angry with the doctor for the rest of their lives. I mean, it sounds to me like you're mature enough to know that it's not the doctor's fault that she had leukemia, but they should not have let her home, and, you know, you might have gotten another month out of her, you know, another month of enjoying her presence. So I think that this is why your great aunt was saying there's nothing else that you could have done. You did all that you could do. And as long as you can understand that, okay, hold on a second. I'm starting to feel Katie's energy a little bit. Is there anybody in the family who is very artistic?
I'm
creative.
You are?
Oh, okay, cool. Because all of a sudden, I'm seeing her, and I see her putting her hand on what looks like brushes and paints and things like this. Do you happen to have a studio or a room or an area of where you live where you have all of your supplies? Because she's indicating that she's there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I spend a lot of time there. Okay, now I'm feeling Katie's energy. It took her a while to come through. And she's standing by the art supplies, and I feel her putting, I see her putting her hand on top of yours. Have you ever felt when you were painting or sketching or drawing her energy as if, you know, something is drawing itself or she's guiding your hand? Because she said, tell my mother that my hand guides hers as she paints or draws or whatever kind of art that you do.
It's the only time I feel any peace.
Okay. Well, you know what? This may be why she's showing me this, Annie, because you just said that you cannot feel her presence when you feel so stressed out. And
right.
You may be more amenable to feeling her presence when you're painting. Do you paint, or what is the form of art?
I do watercolors and colored
okay.
pencils.
Okay. So when you're sketching or doing watercolors, that may be a better time for you to communicate with her or for you to feel her energy, because you're going into the right side of the brain. You're not mm-hmm. using your logical, you know, ritualistic left side of the brain. So you may be feeling her energy more. Okay. All right. Here she is. Now she's talking. Okay. All right, I understand. She's saying to me something about, have you seen her face like in a reflection in glass or mirror yet? Have you had that happen where you've walked past a mirror or a window in the house and you've seen her face flash by? Because she says something about doing this. Has it happened yet?
Daddy saw her outdoors one time, but I haven't. Okay. He's seen her more than I have.
But have you seen her in the house in a reflective surface, like a picture, like the glass inside of a picture frame or a mirror or a window?
Not yet.
Pay attention, okay? Because she says that she is going to do this. It's almost like you're going to swear you saw her out of the corner of your eye in a mirror. Or this, I don't know if you happen to have a room in your house that happens to have lots of framed pictures or mirror or glass more so than others, but she's showing me this, okay? Okay, now she wants to talk about, she's showing me the prescription drugs. Okay, well, she's changing the subject a little bit. She's saying that an older man was there to cross her over. I'm getting a grandfather type feeling. I don't know if this is a grandfather of yours, Annie, or her grandfather.
I was told by someone else that my grandfather
crossed her over.
A lot, yes.
Yes. Well, she's saying a grandfather figure crossed me over. So, okay, that's good enough for me because she's saying he was there to take me to the other side. So I think that she really wants you to know that she did cross over. She's showing me something about a pet. Do you have a pet in the house?
We have her cat named Bert.
Okay, because she says the cat can see me more easily than everybody else, which is not surprising.
He stares at places. He's not upset at all.
She says to me, if you see the cat act strangely, you know that I'm around, okay? You seem to already understand this because she's talking about the pet who's acting weird. So you seem to understand it's the cat can see her. What is the name of the cat?
Bird.
Bird, okay. Let's see what else Katie has to say. Okay, she goes back to your art supplies. I don't know why she's showing me the color red so much. Are you doing something now with a painting that has a lot of red in it?
I haven't been working much.
Maybe that's
what
she's
saying. I was told that she misses me, that she, because she used to love to watch me work, and I just, it's hard, you know, to get the muse back, but.
Well, I think that she wants you to do this because she's, okay, and I don't know why she's showing me Vincent van Gogh. What is the name of that painting? Oh, golly. It's probably something very simple like sunflowers. Do you understand this? You know the Vincent van Gogh painting with all the sunflowers on it?
She loved that one.
Okay. So she did. Okay. She's showing me that painting. Okay. And now she points to you. I'm glad she finally showed up. She points to you and she says if she could, she'd plant her foot right in your rear end and kick you into gear to get you painting again. She also, for some reason, did she really like the color yellow when she was here?
Yes, she did.
Okay, because she's saying love yellow, love yellow. And but with your painting, she shows me something with a lot of red. Did you paint something or draw something that had a lot of red that she really liked? That you can recall?
I did a couple pictures with cardinals, but that was about it.
The bird cardinals?
Yes.
Okay, because you know what? A lot of times when people from the other side communicate, they like to have some fun with both me and you. So since the painting that had a lot of red in it had cardinals in it, the birds, you may start seeing cardinals around a lot. And I know in the New York metropolitan area, they don't always go south for the winter. They hang around. So pay attention to cardinals. People who are deceased will frequently use birds to try to communicate with people who are here because birds are so mobile, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's see what else Katie has to say now that she's here and chatting. She's pointing to something that looks like a diary or a journal. Do you have a diary or a journal of hers?
Caitlin wanted to be a writer.
Oh, okay. Because she points to it. Did she like writing in her journal? Was this a big deal for her?
Yes.
Like she says a diary of Anne Frank. You know, it's like, okay. So I think that she's showing me what she liked when she was here. She's pointing to a birthday cake. Is there somebody's birthday, like right around now? In the family, because she shows, or did she, oh, I don't understand this, or did she pass around the time of somebody's birthday? She's saying there's something significant about a birthday.
She passed about 10 days before my son's birthday.
Oh, okay. Is there one question, one last thing that you'd like to ask her?
My son would like to know if she has anything to say to him.
Okay.
this could be snarky, so prepare yourself.
It could be snarky?
Yes.
Some of that snarkiness goes away on the other side. Let's see. Oh, my. I don't know how old your son is, but I feel like this is just really funny. She's putting her hands over her ears. Was she always asking her brother to stop making so much noise? Or did he play a musical instrument? Or was he always blasting the stereo? Or was he always talking and bothering her? Why does she cover her ears? It's like she's laughing about this now.
All of the above.
Yeah, my son says all of the above.
Oh, okay. Because she's, you know, it's like, oh, I can never get away from him. Or, oh, my gosh. Or, Chad, are you the son?
I'm Tristan.
Yeah, she's saying it was just so funny. It's like, you know, did you like music? Were you always playing the record?
Yeah, I played my music pretty loud, and I played bass guitar.
Oh, okay. And like when she was in the next room and she said, I could never get any peace. Okay. So I think she's just having some fun with you. Okay. Like I can remember listening to all that freaking music coming through the walls. It's, oh, interesting. Do you still play music?
Yeah.
Okay. Because have you been thinking about cutting a CD?
I've been thinking about doing some minor recording just.
Yes.
She wants, band, so.
Yeah, she wants you to do this. Okay, she wants you to do this. I'm also getting a do you know who Steve Tyrell is, the musician, the singer?
Not really.
Okay, Google him. Okay. He does a lot of the old standards, but he's got a real raspy voice. He sounds like Dr. John. Okay. Do you know who Dr. John is?
Yeah.
I don't know why she points to Steve Tyrell, but she draws a connection between Steve Tyrell and you. I don't know if it's the kind of music you should record or if you, when you sing, you've got that Dr. John, Steve Tyrell kind of vibe about you, but she wants you to do this with the music. She wants you to spend more time doing it.
Yeah, my voice is usually pretty gravelly when I'm singing.
Well, if you listen to Steve Tyrell, you'll understand what I'm talking about. If you have a gravelly singing voice, this may be exactly why she's pointing to those two, because those two have like the most gravelly voices that I know of. So this may be her way of indicating from the other side that she knows you've got that sound coming from you. One thing that she has to say to you is get back to the music.
One thing Daddy wants to know, does she hear and understand when he's talking to her at night?
Does she hear it and understand it?
Yeah, because Daddy talks to her at night when he's alone in bed before I come to bed.
I'm asking her. You know, as soon as I asked her that question, she points to this scenario that's taking place out in, what did you say it was, New Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Or Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
Has your husband been asking her for her help with that situation?
Have you been asking Katie? Yes, he has.
Okay, because she says she has heard him ask for help. Tell him I have heard this, she says. Because she pointed immediately to the southwestern part of the United States. She nods her head. She's saying, yeah, Jennifer, you're getting it. You're getting it. So clearly she does hear what he's saying, and she heard him ask for help with this particular matter. Okay. Let's see what she can do about the matter out there in Arizona.
All righty.
Has this been dragging on for a while?
Yeah.
Been going on for like 2 years or since the second month of the year. She gives me the number two. Has something happened in the month of February? For some reason, the number two comes in with this.
They kind of broke up when Danny was about two.
Oh, okay. All right. That may be why I get the number two.
The second part of the custody hearing's coming up in February next month.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me just ask how this is going to work out, if she can tell me. Is there a question about joint custody or split? Because she just said the word split.
The main problem is the distance involved.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Is one person out here on the East Coast and the other person's out there?
Yeah, Tris and his mom and dad are out here, and Devin took off a couple of years ago and took Danny down to Arizona without our son's permission.
I see. Okay. I'm asking your daughter to tell me what happens with this. I don't know if I'll get an answer, but let's see what she says. And how old is Danny now?
4.
And is he in Arizona? You're with him now, right? Is that what you had said?
He's been with us for over a year.
Okay. I have to be very honest. I feel like his time is split between the two states. You know, I don't know if this is going to be a sole custody decision. I don't know if, you know, the child is going to spend the school year in one location and the summer somewhere else. When I got on the phone with you and before we really started talking, I was pulled to that part of the country right away and said you would be going out there. I'm wondering if he spends, let's say, for argument's sake, the school year here, and then you have to take him out there for the summer.
That's possible.
Yeah, because she's saying the word split, so I don't feel that one particular person gets sole custody, I have to say. But I could be wrong, so let's see what happens.
All right. Well, I thank you very much, Jennifer.
You're quite welcome. I'm glad Katie showed up. It took her a little while, but that's what happens.
I'm hoping she's spending some time doing on the other side with things she didn't get to do here.
Oh, well, it seems to be a place of learning and also a great place of art and hobbies. And one of the things that I always, always, always hear from people on the other side, and this is, I think, why she went to your son right away and said, get back into the groove and start singing again and went right to your art supplies with you, is that the one thing I always hear from the other side is they want us to spend a lot more time on our hobbies here and less time at the office, less time watching TV, less time surfing the net, less time sitting around fretting about things. Why is she showing me a charm bracelet or some kind of a bracelet? Does this make sense to you?
I used to design and make jewelry.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Love that.
Maybe you should be doing more of that.
Well, she loved to watch me do it. She'd help me pick out things. And
yeah. See, there we go. I think she did that to me just now to confirm, because she can hear me talking to you. She could hear me saying you need to do more of the hobbies that you enjoyed. And so now she is saying, charm bracelet. Okay. Do more of those things.
I'll try, baby.
Okay. Also, in your house, and I don't know what religion you are, do you have a crucifix or any kind of religious thing on the wall or rosary beads or something like this?
Not really.
Okay. Or is there an area where you go to pray or light a candle? Because it's almost like she's saying develop an area to meditate, like a little altar, not a shrine to her, but kind of like for you, a quiet place where you can sit there and focus. I think that your husband is doing this before he goes to sleep at night. This is his way of communicating with her. You may want to set it up near your art supplies because she says she's around that area all the time.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Quite welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jennifer. That was really interesting. I actually have never, I've like seen John Edward do it on TV, but I've never sat and really listened to somebody do that before. So that was really kind of cool.
Okay. Well, like I said, I think that the great aunt was the usher, the escort who made the connection with me. And it was taking Katie a while to, start communicating with me, but she showed up and started passing on the messages. So I'm glad that she did that.
You have really been very generous with your time with us. I appreciate that. You know, I told you
I enjoyed it.
We didn't know how long we'd take, but we'd kind of go with it. Guys, I think we're going to skip the discussion at the end just because we're already a little over an hour and a half. Are you all good with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's fine. Yes.
I wanted to go ahead and have you give your website one more time for the radio show.
Okay. You can Listen to my radio program at www.contacttalkradio.com. It's on Friday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can reach me by email to jhmediumrare@gmail.com. My website is in the process of being established, so if you need to reach me, it's jhmediumrare@gmail.com.
And we'll put links to that with the podcast on our site as well. Okay, well, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate everybody taking the time and coming on.
Thank all of you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you
for having me on, and I really appreciate it.
Paranormal Underground Presents is a presentation of Paranormal Underground and Ghost Night Media. For more information, please visit www.paranormalunderground.net or www.ghostnightmedia.com.